This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Welcome back into The Whole Show, powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado. Joining me now on our First Advantage Hotline is Chris, don't call me Christopher Dempsey, of Altitude TV. Chris, my friend, always look forward to catching up with you. And I know we had this scheduled yesterday, so I was really hoping the Nuggets would pull it off. They did. It was an ugly one, but the Nuggets found a way, 128-125 to the Utah Jazz. Welcome to the program, my friend.
What's up, man? How are you?
You know, I'm doing pretty good. We're heavy into the basketball mode here. We got college stuff, a lot of great college teams in the area, Chris, and of course the saga surrounding the Nuggets at this stage. So we're hanging in, man. How about yourself?
Yeah, doing really well. It was good to see them get a win. Because, you know, sometimes you just have to get a win. And I know, you know, we get into these situations where you have a team with a good record versus a team with a really bad record. And the assumption is that, well, okay, that should be about a 15, 20 point win. Well, maybe in college that might be the case. The NBA is kind of a different animal in that regard. And when you are a team like the Nuggets and you have been struggling in a lot of areas, you really just want to get that winning feeling back and then start to correct things after a victory. And so I think that's what that represented last night. Jamal obviously was awesome, and there were things to work on, but certainly especially because the stretch coming up these next six games, winning last night was mandatory, and they got it done.
Yeah, I mean, found a way to get it done. I kind of thought the game, there were some good moments, of course, but it was just a frustrating game, Chris, and I made the mistake of going down the rabbit hole last night. I get on social media, and I think I looked at one Utah Jazz clip from, like, their announcers talking trash about Joker, and then it took me down this rabbit hole of random fans, even Nuggets fans, just kind of getting to somewhere weird for my brain, like calling out Joker. And I get it, man. This is the NBA. There's a lot of guys that they get in that mode where they complain to the referee, whatever. But what is he supposed to do, Chris? I mean, you got guards double teaming him. At least one guy is hands all over his body, slapping him in the face, all over his ribs, whatever. You can't get in fights or Joker's out for 10 games, Chris. So I don't. What is he honestly supposed to do with the way that these guys are defending him?
Yeah, the way I looked at last night's game, I thought it was different than the OKC game, and I think the reason why I thought that was because Utah, basically every single one of their players that was tall was sitting on the bench. It was, Jusuf Nurkic was out, Lauri Markkanen was out, Jaren Jackson Jr. was out. And so you have Filipowski, and then you had Oscar Tshiebwe, who was also there. But that guy was 6'8". So, you know, from a coach's perspective, you got to front that. You got to front a player that's 7'2". Like, you can't guard him backward, from behind when you are standing as small as Utah was standing. So I thought their hand was forced last night. They had to front him, and then obviously they brought other players from behind and everywhere else, and it became a very kind of annoying thing for a tall center to have to deal with so many short players. Like little mats everywhere all around them. Mm-hmm. And even a couple of guys where they were getting a little bit physical last night. Whereas I thought the OKC game was, I thought it was physicality bordering on dirty play. And in fact, they had dirty plays in that game. So, you know, I thought it was different yesterday. But look, to answer your question, I think that for Nikola, it's about getting quickly into better post-up position in some of those situations. Just don't let the smaller player kind of push you out to where you're catching the ball kind of out toward the three-point line instead of where you want to catch the ball out, elbow down to block. And then outside of that, when he catches the ball and then he gets swarmed under, then he gets the ball out, then his teammates have to be really moving toward the basket. And we saw some instances of that last night. Bruce Brown's on some cuts under the rim. He was able to find them for some layups. And then you kick it out to a three-point shooter as well. And they have to start making those shots. And when they start making those shots and the team feels the opposing team feels really threatened, that's when the space starts to get better for Nikola. Now when he catches the ball, not as many players around him because they're worried about other people as well, and then he can go to work.
Yeah, and Chris, I want to get to that part of it too, because I have several questions on that side, his first placement of Joker. But who was the guard trying to block out Joker, and he's like on the ground basically, and Joker kind of falls on top of him.
Laid on top of him. Yeah, that was Keontae George.
And he's a phenomenal player. He has no interest in passing the basketball, but he's a phenomenal scorer. I'm asking the question because I'm seeing people, what the hell's Joker doing out there? What is he supposed to do in that situation?
Well, so if you have a smaller player trying to box you out, and really, the technique there is, you saw how Keontae basically wanted to be the lowest player. So, like, low man wins in basketball. So if you and obviously Keontae's standing way shorter than him in the first place, so it's easier for him to get lower. And then when you get lower, now you're kind of trying to back into him on a box out. But he's so low that now he's into, Joker's knees. And now Jokic is falling over him and then landing on him. And so, for Nikola Jokic, it's about himself getting a little bit lower, but he's just so good rebounding those basketballs off the rim, basically standing straight up, that he almost never has to do it. And also, he's usually battling against a player comparable in size. So there's not a lot of funny business in terms of getting low to get a good box out position to now explode up toward the basketball. He just kind of tips the ball around, right? Or water polos it, like catches it with one hand, water polos it, throws it to wherever it needs to be thrown, or gets it right straight back up to the rim. And so when a player is getting under you that way and lower, then the problem puts you off balance, obviously. Now you're not really able to get into the, then everything gets awkward after that because you're tripping over a player because you're not low either. And it just becomes a real weird situation for a post player. And I just think in that instance, that's what we were looking at. Keontae just was like, hey, the only thing I can do here is try to get into him and root him out. And for the bigger player, you have to get low as well. Maybe even get your knee into his back or something like that. And root him out. And so, but because that's not necessarily how Nikola Jokic operates around the rim, it became an awkward situation. He ended up falling on him. And honestly, as a big man, that's exactly what you should do. So, if you have a small player getting into you like that, and now you're off balance and you can't do what you want to do, if you fall, you fall right on that guy. So that he knows the next time you do this, it's going to hurt just as much.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought honestly that was really well done by Nikola just to fall right flat on him and to make him think about it for the next time. But Utah just had too many small players. They were trying to guard a taller player and they were fronting him all night long. There's not going to be a lot of situations like that with a team that small trying to guard a player that big going forward.
Chris Dempsey joining us from Altitude TV. Chris, you talked a little bit about and to avoid some of those double teams, those crazy double teams. I think it was right out of the fourth quarter to start. There was like three in a row. Joker gets the ball on the wing, and they double him quickly. And you're seeing a lot of the grabbing and stuff go on there.
Yeah.
With Coach Adelman, at that point, You know, what is it? Do you have to, like, we got to start setting him up without the ball somewhere else? Because I know a lot of the plays can run. They can run plays with him anywhere on the floor. But in that instance, in that particular night, you were seeing them really get that double team going. What is that? Is that a case where for Adelman, it's just, hey, instead of starting there, we're just going to not waste any time. We're going to get you down in the paint as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so the issue with schematically is the more he's stationary, the easier, like any player, the more you're stationary, the easier you are to guard into kind of hound. And so what you couldn't do is just run him to the block really fast. I mean, if it was a transition situation and he is ahead of the ball, okay, yeah, get a quick post up, get a hit ahead pass. Now he's usually working on a player one-on-one and he can just put away a quick layup or a dunk. But if he's working behind the basketball, then it just becomes a little bit more complicated because in those instances, you almost want him to have the ball and then to maybe set this inverted pick and roll. But Utah was just going to blitz the ball out of his hands anyway. You know what was interesting about last night was the Nuggets made 16 three-pointers. Usually in cases like that where you are making jump shots to that degree, and you have a player like Jamal Murray who is just making all the shots, that really recalibrates the defense
yeah.
to do different things. But Utah just didn't care. They didn't care how many shots the Nuggets were making. They didn't care how many shots that Jamal was making. They just knew that they were going to double and triple team Nikola Jokic, period. And so I just thought that that was a very unique circumstance because for all intents and purposes, the Nuggets really did shoot them out of that strategy, but Utah just said, nah, we're going to stay doing this thing. And so it became a problem for Nikola Jokic all night long. Whereas, but for the most part, if you're making threes to the level that they made them, and then you have your literal other star on the court doing whatever he wants against single up coverage all night long, no other team would have let Jamal Murray have that much space into a 30-point game, a 35-point game, a 40-point game. Like, that just wouldn't have happened. But they were so concerned about Nikola Jokic over anything else that they just let everything else go and just decided to hound him all night long.
And Jamal just had one of those nights, man, and a frustrating night maybe for Joker. But Jamal, like you said, everything was working for him. 45 points, that's going to win you a lot of basketball games. And if you add in, you know, it's not like Joker had a bad game, but if you add in, you know, he starts getting into the high 20s or whatever, that's the combo right there.
Yeah, it is. And so for Jamal, look, I thought this was well done. Jamal basically said last night, we're not going to lose this game tonight. If I have to score 50 on this court tonight for us to win, then I'm going to very well do it. And because Utah was not really blitzing him off the ball or anything, like, you know, Jamal has been the recipient of a lot of this stuff, you know, this season, which, especially when Nikola wasn't playing, which is if you bring the ball screen over, then the defense puts two on the ball, period. If he's working in space, sometimes the defense just runs an extra defender over there to get the ball out of his hands anyway, which is what I would have thought would have happened last night to a really greater degree, especially after he crossed the 30-point mark and then the 35-point mark, and he's going on up to 40. But that's not what they did, and so he was able to really find openings. He was really able to take his man one-on-one, get to the mid-range a lot, obviously made three-pointers, a bunch of three-pointers as well. I just think, if Jamal doesn't do what he did yesterday, the Nuggets most certainly lose, and we're having a very, very different conversation today. But he continues to have just an extraordinary season and, you know, for all intents and purposes, really saved the Nuggets last night.
Yeah, Chris Dempsey joining us, Altitude TV. Chris, Cam Johnson didn't play last night with that ankle. Obviously, I heard Vic Lombardi put out one of his post games from the other day. And obviously the dude just sounds down, you know, and yep. you're looking at the lack of production, the injuries, and the expectations have certainly, he's on a team that has different expectations than he's used to. How's he doing at this point, and where do you see him going from here?
It's a good question. He's quite clearly frustrated and just disappointed. And I think for him, you know, I think it's a lot of layers, man. You know, he comes from a kind of an injury-prone history, And, you know, I know prior to this season, you know, he said, I believe it was Media Day, he said he was, you know, I mean, his goal was to play 70 games this season. He's never played 70 games in any season in his career. And that's obviously not going to be the case this year either. He's only played 37 games. And so I think what we saw, that outpouring of emotion that we saw, was just very disappointment. You know, he said at one point in that interview that he says, you know, I'm summarizing this, but he talked about not letting it get to him to the point where he wanted to retire. Basically, he's like, I'm not going to hang it up. And when your thoughts are to that level, then you're not in a good space. And I just think he feels like his body is betraying him. And his body is betraying him. You know, it's not allowing him to be on the court for long enough to have the impact that he wants for this basketball team. And when you go through, you know, I'm looking at his career, and these are the games he's played every single year: 57, 60, 66, 25, 58, 57, and this year 37. And so, you know, almost at no point in his career has he been able to really get a foothold into a season and really make the impact that he wants to make. And then you come to the Denver Nuggets, to your point, a team with championship expectations. There's a lot of fanfare when he got here, you know, as to what he would mean for this basketball team. And then the injuries start coming again. And it is a very it's a very difficult place for athletes to be in, especially when you know that you are starting to have a really good impact. And remember, he didn't start the season off really well, but then he started to really get a groove, and that's when he got his first really significant injury. Then he came back, and quite honestly, he rivals first few games, looked really good, looked like right, he picked up right where he left off, boom, injured again. And, you know, it wears on an athlete. It's quite clearly wearing on Cam Johnson. Hopefully he's got a really good support system around him. I know his teammates will rally around him and pick his spirits up, because he can be a very important piece on this basketball team. But he's got to get his body right, and if he can get his body right, then hopefully he can get into a better headspace.
Chris Dempsey, last one for you, man, on the injury front, you know, on the Cam Johnson note, but also, are we going to get good news this week about Aaron Gordon, maybe even Peyton Watson?
It's a good question. David Adelman said that a few days ago that he hoped to have the full group together for the final 20 games of the season. Well, with Cam Johnson out, I don't know what that means for that now. But at the time, Cam Johnson was playing, and so that looked like that. Basically, he was just basically saying that the return of AG and Peyton Watson were on the horizon. And so, look, I don't know. I don't know what the exact timeline is about for that is, but I would expect that Tuesday. So if not, late this week, then I would expect by, you know, early to mid next week. You know, it sounds like they're very close. So, the Nuggets obviously need them to be on the court, but obviously, especially in regards to Aaron Gordon, you need him to be, pretty well 100%. And then I would expect that he would not play any back-to-backs when he comes back. And the Nuggets have a few of them still left on their schedule. But it sounds like they're close. And I think that's very positive for everybody involved.
And a brutal schedule. We're gonna learn a lot about this regular season version of the Nuggets here pretty soon. Thursday, the Lakers. Friday, the Knicks. Monday, the Thunder again. Houston, Spurs, Los Angeles. I mean, that's a pretty brutal stretch here for the next 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, the hits just keep on coming. You know what was interesting? It was prior to the All-Star break, I think we were doing some of our final broadcasts prior to the All-Star break, and they had a game in Chicago, and I was doing the studio shows with Bill Hanslick. And I said to him, I said, you know, this is a milestone game. And he says, why? What do you mean? And I said, milestone, you know, kind of tongue in cheek. But I said, this is the last game on the road against an Eastern Conference team. They had played so many road games and they had played every single team in the East already. So what that just meant was, is even though after the All-Star break, you were definitely not going to be on the road, not nearly as much as you were, you know, percentage-wise, home to road, that you were prior to the All-Star break, but you had to play so many Western Conference teams. You still had, at the time, three games against Oklahoma City, two more against, I think two more against the Lakers, two more against San Antonio. Houston is mixed in. Like, every team that's good was, Minnesota is mixed in. Every team that's good was coming up on your schedule, not to mention some of the really good Eastern Conference teams coming to Denver. So Boston had yet to come to Denver. They have our, now the Knicks are coming to Denver. So this schedule really is brutal, man. It really is. And, you know, for the Nuggets, that's why it was even more important to get that win in Utah, because I think if they went 3-3 in the next six games, I think we'd all go, oh, okay. You know, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very, very tough. They can take them one game at a time, and we'll see what they can do against LeBron and Luka and the Lakers on Thursday.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait for the stretch, man. Chris, excellent stuff by you today, as always, my friend. Look forward to the next time we chat. I'll be bugging you soon, I'm sure.
I'll be right here for you, my guy.
All right, my man. We'll talk to you soon. Chris Dempsey, Altitude TV. Nuggets have the Lakers on Thursday, March 5th, against my least favorite team in the history of the world, Mike. How about that? The Lakers.
Mine is Oklahoma City.
That's your least favorite team in the history of the world now?
Yeah, because they used to be the Supersonics.
Well, they're one of my least favorite. They're dirty. They're dirty. Lou Dort is a dirty player. And I think we're all saying it now. But that's what's frustrating me is I'm seeing a bunch of stuff online like the Joker's now in that territory. No, he's not going out of his way to trip people. I don't know. Frustrated. 27 minutes after the hour. Michael, let's take a quick break. It's the whole show powered by Mosquito Joe of Northern Colorado. We're on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFK.
Keep it on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. Honesty, integrity, hard work. It's the way you live and the way we bank. Bank of Colorado has been a family-owned, community-focused bank for generations and will be here for generations to come. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.